daimyos were equally obliged to visit the castle with their families to pay their respects to the heir, also twice a year. So all were controlled, all defenseless for part of the year, every year.
The meeting was fixed, ne? If he didn't go, it would be treason, ne?
Treason? Against whom?
Hiramatsu reddened even more.
Ishido's trying to isolate our master. Listen, if I had Ishido in my power, like he has Lord Torunaga, I wouldn't hesitate for a moment, whatever the risks. Ishido's head would have been off his shoulders long since, and his spirit awaiting rebirth.
The general was involuntarily twisting the well-used sheath of the sword that he carried in his left hand. His right hand, gnarled and calloused, lay ready in his lap. He studied Erasmus.
Where are the cannon?
I had them brought ashore. For safety. Will Torunaga-sama make another compromise with Ishido?
When I left Osaka, all was quiet. The council was to meet in 3 days.
Will the clash become open?
I'd like it open. But my lord, if he wants to compromise, he will compromise.
Hiromatsu looked back at Yabu.
He ordered all allied daimyos to wait for him at Edo until he returned. This is not Edo.
Yes, I felt that the ship was important enough to our cause to investigate it immediately.
There was no need, Yabu-san. You should have more confidence. Nothing happens without our master's knowledge. He would have sent someone to investigate it. It happens he sent me. How long have you been here?
A day and a night.
Then you were 2 days coming from Edo?
Yes.
You came very quickly. You are to be complimented.
To gain time, Yabu began telling Hiromatsu about his forced march. But his mind was on more vital matters. Who was the spy? How had Torunaga got the information about the ship as quickly as he himself? And who had told Torunaga about his departure? How could he maneuver now and deal with Hiromatsu? Hiromatsu heard him out, then said pointedly,
Lord Torunaga has confiscated the ship and all its contents.
A shocked silence swamped the shore. This was Izu, Yabu's fief, and Torunaga had no rights here. Neither had Hiromatsu any rights to order anything. Yabu's hand tightened on his sword. Hiromatsu waited with practiced calmness. He had done exactly as Torunaga had ordered, and now he was committed. It was implacably kill or be killed. Yabu knew also that now he must commit himself. There was no more waiting. If he refused to give up the ship, he would have to kill Hiromatsu Iron Fist, because Hiromatsu Iron Fist would never leave without it. There were perhaps 200 elite samurai on the galley that was moored to the dock. They would also have to die. He could invite them ashore and beguile them, and within a few hours he could easily have enough samurai in Anjiro to overwhelm them all, for he was a master at ambush. But that would force Torunaga to send armies against Izu.
You will be swallowed up, he told himself, unless Ishido comes to your rescue. And why should Ishido rescue you, when your enemy Ikawa Jikyo is Ishido's kinsman, and wants Izu for himself? Killing Hiromatsu will open hostilities, because Torunaga will be honor-bound to move against you, which would force Ishido's hand, and Izu would be the first battlefield. What about my guns? My beautiful guns and my beautiful plan? I'll lose my immortal chance forever if I have to turn them over to Torunaga.
His hand was on the Murasama sword, and he could feel the blood in his sword arm and the blinding urge to begin. He had discarded at once the possibility of not mentioning the muskets. If the news of the cargo ship had been betrayed, certainly the identity of its cargo was equally betrayed.
But how did Torunaga get the news so quickly? By carrier pigeon,
That's the only answer. From Edo or from here? Who possesses carrier pigeons here? Why haven't I such a service? That's Tsukimoto's fault. He should have thought of it, ne? Make up your mind. War or no war?
Yabu called down the ill will of Buddha, of all kami, of all gods that had ever been or were yet to be invented, upon the man or men who had betrayed him, upon their parents, and upon their descendants for 10,000 generations. And he conceded.
Lord Toranaga cannot confiscate the ship, because it's already a gift to him. I've dictated a letter to that effect. Isn't that so, Tsukimoto?
Yes, sire.
Of course, if Lord Toranaga wishes to consider it confiscated, he may. But it was to be a gift.
Yabu was pleased to hear that his voice sounded matter-of-fact.
He will be happy with the booty. Thank you, on behalf of my master.
Hiromatsu again marveled at Toranaga's foresight. Toranaga had predicted that this would happen, and that there would be no fighting.
I don't believe it, Hiromatsu had said. No daimyo would stand for such usurping of his rights. Yabu won't. I certainly wouldn't. Not even to you, sire.
But you would have obeyed orders, and you would have told me about the ship. Yabu must be manipulated, eh? I need his violence and cunning. He neutralizes Ikawa Jikyu and guards my flank.
Here on the beach, under a good sun, Hiromatsu forced himself into a polite bow, hating his own duplicity.
Lord Toranaga will be delighted with your generosity.
Yabu was watching him closely.
It's not a Portuguese ship.
Yes, so we heard.
And it's pirate.
He saw the general's eyes narrow.
Eh?
As he told him what the priest had said, Yabu thought,
if that's news to you, as it was to me, doesn't that mean that Toranaga had the same original information as I? But if you know the contents of the ship, then the spy is Omi, one of his samurai, or a villager. There's an abundance of cloth, some treasure, muskets, powder, and shot.
Hiromatsu hesitated. Then he said,
the cloth is Chinese silks? No, Hiromatsu-san,
he said, using the san. They were daimyos equally. But now that he was magnanimously giving the ship, he felt safe enough to use the less deferential term. He was pleased to see that the word had not gone unnoticed by the older man.
I'm daimyo of Izu, by the sun, the moon, and the stars. It's very unusual. A thick, heavy cloth. Totally useless to us, he said. I've had everything worth salvaging brought ashore. Good. Please put all of it aboard my ship.
What?
Yabu's bowels almost burst.
All of it. At once.
Now?
Yes. So sorry, but you'll naturally understand that I want to return to Osaka as soon as possible. Yes, but... but will there be space for everything? Put the cannon back on the barbarian ship and seal it up. Boats will be arriving within 3 days to tow it to Edo. As to the muskets, powder, and shot, there's...
Hiromatsu stopped, avoiding the trap that he suddenly realized had been set for him.
There's just enough space for the 500 muskets, Toranaga had told him. And all the powder and the 20,000 silver doubloons aboard the galley. Leave the cannon on the deck of the ship and the cloth in the holds. Let Yabu do the talking and give him orders. Don't let him have time to think. But don't get irritated or impatient with him. I need him, but I want those guns and that ship. Beware of his trying to trap you into revealing that you know the exactness of the cargo. Because he must not uncover our spy.
Hiromatsu cursed his inability to play these necessary games.
As to the space needed, he said shortly, perhaps you should tell me. And just exactly what is the cargo? How many muskets and shot and so forth? And is the bullion in bar or coins? Is it silver or gold?
Sugimoto!
Yes, Yabu-sama?
Get the list of the contents. I'll deal with you later,
Yabu thought.
Sugimoto hurried away.
You must be tired, Hiromatsu-san. Perhaps some cha. Accommodations have been prepared for you, such as they are. The baths are totally inadequate, but perhaps one would refresh you a little.
Thank you. You're very thoughtful. Some cha and a bath would be excellent.
Later. First, tell me everything that has happened since the ship arrived here.
Yabu told him the facts, omitting the part about the courtesan and the boy, which was unimportant. On Yabu's orders, Omi told his story, except for his private conversations with Yabu. And Mura told his, excluding the part about the engine's erection, which, Mura reasoned, though interesting, might have offended Hiromatsu, whose own, at his age, might be few and far between. Hiromatsu looked at the plume of smoke that still rose from the pyre.
How many of the pirates are left?
10, sire, including the leader, Omi said.
Where's the leader now?
In Mura's house.
What did he do? What was the first thing he did there after getting out of the pit?
He went straight to the bathhouse, sire, Mura said quickly. Now he's asleep, sire, like a dead man.
You didn't have to carry him this time?
No, sire.
He seems to learn quickly.
Hiromatsu glanced back at Omi.
You think they can be taught to behave?
No, not for certain, Hiromatsu-sama.
Could you clean away an enemy's urine from your back?
No, Lord.
Nor could I. Never. Barbarians are very strange.
Hiromatsu turned his mind back to the ship.
Who will be supervising the loading?
My nephew,
Omi-san.
Good. Omi-san, I want to leave before dusk. My captain will help you be very quick. Within 3 sticks.
The unit of time was the time it took for a standard stick of incense to smolder away. Approximately 1 hour for 1 stick.
Yes, Lord.
Why not come with me to Osaka, Yabu-san?
Hiromatsu said, as though it was a sudden thought.
Lord Toranaga would be delighted to receive all these things from your hands. Personally. Please. There's room enough.
When Yabu began to protest, he allowed him to continue for a time, as Toranaga had ordered. And then he said, as Toranaga had ordered.
I insist. In Lord Toranaga's name, I insist. Your generosity needs to be rewarded. With my head and my lands?
Yabu asked himself bitterly, knowing that there was nothing he could do now but accept gratefully.
Thank you. I would be honored. Good. Well then, that's all done,
Anfis said with obvious relief.
Now some cha and a bath.
Yabu politely led the way up the hill to Omi's house. The old man was washed and scoured, and then he lay gratefully in the steaming heat. Later, Suo's hands made him new again. A little rice and raw fish and pickled vegetables, taken sparingly in private. Cha sipped from good porcelain. A short, dreamless nap. After 3 sticks, the shoji slid open. The personal bodyguard knew better than to go into the room uninvited. Hiromatsu was already awake, and the sword half unsheathed and ready.
Yabu-sama is waiting outside, sir. He says the ship is loaded.
Excellent.
Hiromatsu went onto the veranda and relieved himself into the bucket.
Your men are very efficient, Yabu-san.
Your men helped, Hiromatsu-san. They are more than efficient.
Yes, and by the sun, they had better be.
Hiromatsu thought, then said genially,
Nothing like a good piss from a full bladder, so long as there's plenty of power behind the stream. Ne? Makes you feel young again. At my age, you need to feel young.
He eased his loincloth comfortably, expecting Yabu to make some polite remark in agreement, but none was forthcoming. His irritation began to rise, but he curbed it.
Have the pirate leader taken to my ship?
What?
You were generous enough to make a gift of the ship and the contents. The crew are contents. So I'm taking the pirate leader to Osaka. Lord Toranaga wants to see him. Naturally, you do what you like with the rest of them. But during your absence, please make certain that your retainers realize the barbarians are my master's property, and that there had better be 9 in good health, alive, and here, when he wants them.
Yabu hurried away to the jetty, where Omi would be. When, earlier, he had left Hiromatsu to his bath, he had walked up the track that meandered past the funeral ground. There he had bowed briefly to the pyre and continued on, skirting the terrace fields of wheat and fruit, to come out at length on a small plateau high above the village. A tidy kami shrine guarded this tender place. An ancient tree bequeathed shade and tranquility. He had gone there to quell his rage and to think. He had not dared to go near the ship, or Omi, or his men, for he knew that he would have ordered most, if not all of them, to commit seppuku, which would have been a waste, and he would have slaughtered the village, which would have been foolish. Peasants alone caught the fish and grew the rice that provided the wealth of the samurai. While he had sat and fumed alone and tried to sharpen his brain, the sun bent down and drove the sea mists away. The clouds that shrouded the distant mountains to the west had parted for an instant, and he had seen the beauty of the snow-capped peaks soaring. The sight had settled him, and he had begun to relax and think and plan.
"Set your spies to find the spy," he told himself. Nothing that Hiromatsu said indicated whether the betrayal was from here or from Edo. In Osaka, you've powerful friends, the Lord Ishido himself among them. Perhaps one of them can smell out the fiend. But send a private message at once to your wife, in case the informer is there. What about Omi? Make him responsible for finding the informer here? Is he the informer? That's not likely, but not impossible. It's more than probable the betrayal began in Edo. A matter of timing. If Toranaga in Osaka got the information about the ship when it arrived, then Hiromatsu would have been here first. You've informers in Edo. Let them prove their worth. What about the barbarians? Now they are only profit from the ship. How can you use them? Wait, didn't Omi give you the answer? You could use their knowledge of the sea and ships to barter with Toranaga for guns, ne? Another possibility. Become Toranaga's vassal completely. Give him your plan. Ask him to allow you to lead the regiment of the guns, for his glory. But a vassal should never expect his lord to reward his services or even acknowledge them. To serve is duty. Duty is samurai. Samurai is immortality. That would be the best way. The very best,
Yabu thought.
Can I truly be his vassal? Or Ishido's? No. That's unthinkable. Ally, yes. Vassal, no. Good. So the barbarians are an asset, after all. Omi's right. Again.
He had felt more composed, and then when the time had come and a messenger had brought the information that the ship was loaded, he had gone to Hiromatsu and discovered that now he had lost even the barbarians. He was boiling when he reached the jetty.
Omi-san!
Yes, Yabu-sama?
Bring the barbarian leader here.
I'm taking him to Osaka. As to the others, see that they're well cared for while I'm away. I want them fit and well behaved. Use the pit if you have to.
Ever since the galley had arrived, Omi's mind had been in a turmoil, and he had been filled with anxiety for Yabu's safety.
Let me come with you, Lord. Perhaps I can help.
No. Now I want you to look after the barbarians.
Please, perhaps in some small way I can repay your kindness to me.
There's no need,
Yabu said, more kindly than he wanted to. He remembered that he had increased Omi's salary to 3,000 koku and extended his fief because of the bullion and the guns, which now had vanished. But he had seen the concern that filled the youth and had felt an involuntary warmth.
With vassals like this, I will carve an empire, he promised himself. Omi will lead one of the units when I get back my guns.
When war comes, well, I'll have a very important job for you, Omi-san. Now go and get the barbarian.
Omi took 4 guards with him, and Mura to interpret. Blackthorn was dragged out of sleep. It took him a minute to clear his head. When the fog lifted, Omi was staring down at him. One of the samurai had pulled the quilt off him. Another had shaken him awake. The other 2 carried thin, vicious-looking bamboo canes. Mura had a short coil of rope. Mura knelt and bowed.
Konnichiwa.
Good day.
Konnichiwa.
Blackthorn pulled himself onto his knees, and though he was naked, he bowed with equal politeness.
It's only a politeness, Blackthorn told himself. It's their custom, and they bow for good manners, so there's no shame to it. And nakedness is ignored, and is also their custom, and there's no shame to nakedness either.
Anjin, please to dress,
Mura said.
Anjin? Ah, I remember now. The priest said they can't pronounce my name, so they've given me the name Anjin, which means pilot, and this is not meant as an insult. And I will be called Anjin-san, Mr. Pilot, when I merit it.
Don't look at Omi, he cautioned himself. Not yet. Don't remember the village square and Omi and Croak and Petersham. One thing at a time. That's what you're going to do. That's what you have sworn before God to do. One thing at a time. Vengeance will be mine, by the Lord God.
Blackthorn saw that his clothes had been cleaned again, and he blessed whoever had done it. He had crawled out of his clothes in the bathhouse as though they had been plague-infested. 3 times he had made them scour his back, with the roughest sponge and with pumice. But he could still feel the piss burn. He took his eyes off Mura and looked at Omi. He derived a twisted pleasure from the knowledge that his enemy was alive and nearby. He bowed as he had seen equals bow, and he held the bow.
Konnichiwa, Omi-san, he said.
There's no shame in speaking their language, no shame in saying good day, or in bowing first, as is their custom. Omi bowed back. Blackthorn noted that it was not quite equal, but it was enough for the moment.
Konnichiwa, Anjin,
Omi said. The voice was polite, but not enough.
Anjin-san,
Blackthorn looked directly at him. Their wills locked, and Omi was called as a man is called at cards or at dice.
Do you have manners?
Konnichiwa, Anjin-san,
Omi said at length, with a brief smile. Blackthorn dressed quickly. He wore loose trousers and a codpiece, socks and shirt and coat, his long hair tied into a neat queue, and his beard trimmed with scissors the barber had loaned to him.
Hi, Omi-san.
Blackthorn asked when he was dressed, feeling better but very guarded, wishing he had more words to use.
Please, hand,
Mura said. Blackthorn did not understand and said so with signs. Mura held out his own hands and parodied tying them together.
Hand, please.
No. Blackthorn said it directly to Omi and shook his head.
That's not necessary, he said in English. Not necessary at all. I've given my word.
He kept his voice gentle and reasonable, then added harshly, copying Omi.
Wakarimasu ka, Omi-san?
Do you understand?
Omi laughed. Then he said, Hai, Anjin-san. Wakarimasu.
He turned and left. Mura and the others stared after him, astounded. Blackthorn followed Omi into the sun. His boots had been cleaned. Before he could slip them on, the maid Onna was there on her knees and she helped him.
Thank you, Haku-san,
he said, remembering her real name.
What's the word for thank you? He wondered.
He walked through the gate, Omi ahead.
I'm after you, you god-cursed bust! Wait a minute. Remember what you promised yourself. And why swear at him, even to yourself? He hasn't sworn at you. Swearing's for the weak, or for fools, isn't it? One thing at a time. It is enough that you are after him. You know it clearly, and he knows it clearly. Make no mistake, he knows it very clearly.
The four samurai flanked Blackthorn as he walked down the hill, the harbour still hidden from him, Mura discreetly 10 paces back, Omi ahead.
Are they going to put me underground again? He wondered. Why did they want to bind my hands? Didn't Omi say yesterday? Christ Jesus, was that only yesterday? If you behave, you can stay out of the pit. If you behave... Tomorrow another man will be taken out of the pit. Perhaps, and more perhaps. Isn't that what he said? Have I behaved? I wonder how Croak is. The lad was alive when they carried him off to the house where the crew first stayed.
Blackthorn felt better today. The bath and the sleep and the fresh food had begun to repair him. He knew that if he was careful and could rest and sleep and eat, within a month he would be able to run a mile and swim a mile and command a fighting ship and take her around the earth.
Don't think about that yet. Just guard your strength this day. A month's not too much to hope for, eh?
The walk down the hill and through the village was tiring him.
You're weaker than you thought. No, you are stronger than you thought, he ordered himself.
The mass of Erasmus jutted over the tiled roofs and his heart quickened. Ahead, the street curved with the contour of the hillside, slid down to the square and ended. A curtained palanquin stood in the sun. Four bearers in brief loincloth squatted beside it, absently picking their teeth. The moment they saw Omi, they were on their knees, bowing mightily. Omi barely nodded at them as he strode past, but then a girl came out of the neat gateway to go to the palanquin, and he stopped. Blackthorn caught his breath and stopped also. A young maid ran out to hold a green parasol to shade the girl. Omi bowed, and the girl bowed, and they talked happily to each other, the strutting arrogance vanishing from Omi. The girl wore a peach-coloured kimono and a wide sash of gold and gold-thonged slippers. Blackthorn saw her glance at him. Clearly she and Omi were discussing him. He did not know how to react or what to do, so he did nothing but wait patiently, glorying in the sight of her, the cleanliness and the warmth of her presence. He wondered if she and Omi were lovers, or if she was Omi's wife, and he thought, is she truly real? Omi asked her something, and she answered and fluttered her green fan that shimmered and danced in the sunlight, her laugh musical, the delicacy of her exquisite. Omi was smiling too, then he turned on his heel and strode off, samurai once more. Blackthorn followed. Her eyes were on him as he passed, and he said,
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa, Anjin-san,
she replied, her voice touching him. She was barely 5 feet tall and perfect. As she bowed slightly, the breeze shook the outer silk and showed the beginnings of the scarlet underkimono,
which he found surprisingly erotic. The girl's perfume still surrounded him as he turned the corner. He saw the trapdoor and Erasmus, and the galley. The girl vanished from his mind.
Why are our gun ports empty? Where are our cannon? And what in the name of Christ is the slave galley doing here? And what's happened in the pit?
One thing at a time. First, Erasmus. The stub of the foremast that the storm had carried away jutted nastily.
That doesn't matter, he thought. We could get her out to sea easily. We could slip the moorings. The night airflow and the tide would take us out silently, and we could careen tomorrow on the far side of that speck of island. Half a day to step the spare mast, and then all sails ho and away into the far deep. Maybe it'd be better not to anchor, but to flee to safer waters. But who'd crew? You can't take her out by yourself. Where did that slaver come from? And why is it here?
He could see knots of samurai and sailors down at the wharf. The 60-oared vessel, 30 oars aside, was neat and trim, the oars stacked with care, ready for instant departure, and he shivered involuntarily. The last time he'd seen a galley was off the Gold Coast 2 years ago, when his fleet was outward bound, all 5 ships together. She had been a rich coastal trader, a Portuguese, and she was fleeing from her against the wind. Erasmus could not catch her, to capture her or sink her. Blackthorn knew the North African coast well. He had been a pilot and ship's master for 10 years for the London Company of Barbary Merchants, the joint stock company that fitted out fighting merchantmen to run the Spanish blockade and trade along the Barbary coast. He had piloted to West and North Africa, south as far as Lagos, north and eastward through the treacherous Straits of Gibraltar, ever Spanish patrolled, as far as Salerno in the Kingdom of Naples. The Mediterranean was dangerous to English and Dutch shipping. Spanish and Portuguese enemy were there in strength, and worse, the Ottomans, the infidel Turks, swarmed the seas with slave galleys and with fighting ships. These voyages had been very profitable for him, and he had bought his own ship, a 150-ton brig, to trade on his own behalf. But he had had her sunk under him and lost everything. Then they had been caught a lee, windlass off Sardinia, when the Turk galley had come out of the sun. The fight was cruel, and then, towards sunset, the enemy ram caught their stern, and they were boarded fast. He had never forgotten the screaming cry, "Allah!" as the corsairs came over his gunwales. They were armed with swords and with muskets. He had rallied his men, and the first attack had been beaten off, but the second overwhelmed them, and he ordered the magazine fired. His ship was in flames, and he decided that it was better to die than to be put to the oars. He'd always had a mortal terror of being taken alive and made a galley slave, not an unusual fate for a captured seaman. When the magazine blew, the explosion tore the bottom out of his ship and destroyed part of the corsair galley, and in the confusion, he managed to swim to the longboat and escape with 4 of the crew. Those who could not swim to him, he had had to leave, and he still remembered their cries for help in God's name. But God had turned his face from those men that day, so they had perished or gone to the oars. And God had kept his face on Blackthorn and the 4 men that time, and they had managed to reach Cagliari in Sardinia. And from there they had made it home, penniless. That was 8 years ago, the same year that plague had erupted again in London. Plague and famine and riots of the starving unemployed. His younger brother and family had been wiped out. His own firstborn son had perished. But in the winter the plague vanished, and he had easily got a new ship and gone to sea to repair his fortune. First for the London Company of Barbary Merchants, then a voyage to the West Indies hunting Spaniards. After that, a little richer, he navigated for Kees Veerman, the Dutchman, on his second voyage to search for the legendary Northeast Passage to Cathay and the Spice Islands of Asia that were supposed to exist in the ice seas, north of Tsarist Russia. They searched for 2 years, then Kees Veerman died in the Arctic wastes with 80% of the crew, and Blackthorn turned back and led the rest of the men home. Then, 3 years ago,
He'd been approached by the newly formed Dutch East India Company and asked to pilot their first expedition to the New World. They whispered secretly that they had acquired, at huge cost, a contraband Portuguese rotter that supposedly gave away the secrets of Magellan Strait, and they wanted to prove it. Of course, the Dutch merchants would have preferred to use one of their own pilots, but there was none to compare in quality with Englishmen trained by the monopolistic Trinity House. And the awesome value of this rutter forced them to gamble on Blackthorn. But he was the perfect choice. He was the best Protestant pilot alive. His mother had been Dutch, and he spoke Dutch perfectly. Blackthorn had agreed enthusiastically and accepted the 15% of all profit as his fee, and, as was custom, had solemnly, before God, sworn allegiance to the company and vowed to take their fleet out and to bring it home again.
By God, I am going to bring Erasmus home, Blackthorn thought, and with as many of the men as he leaves alive.
They were crossing the square now, and he took his eyes off the slaver and saw the three samurai guarding the trapdoor. They were eating deftly from bowls with the wooden sticks that Blackthorn had seen them use many times, but could not manage himself.
Umi-san!
With signs, he explained that he wanted to go to the trapdoor, just to shout down to his friends. Only for a moment. But Omi shook his head and said something he did not understand, and continued across the square, down the foreshore, past the cauldron, and onto the jetty. Blackthorn followed obediently.
One thing at a time, he told himself. Be patient.
Once on the jetty, Omi turned and called back to the guards on the trapdoor. Blackthorn saw them open the trapdoor and peer down. One of them beckoned to villagers who fetched the ladder and a full freshwater barrel and carried it below. The empty one they brought back aloft. And the latrine barrel.
There. If you're patient and play their game with their rules, you can help your crew, he thought with satisfaction.
Groups of samurai were collected near the galley. A tall old man was standing apart. From the deference that the Daimyo Yabu showed him, and the way the others jumped at his slightest remark, Blackthorn immediately realized his importance.
Is he their king? He wondered.
Omi knelt with humility. The old man half bowed, turned his eyes on him. Mustering as much grace as he could, Blackthorn knelt and put his hands flat on the sand floor of the jetty, as Omi had done, and bowed as low as Omi.
Konnichiwa, sama, he said politely.
He saw the old man half bow again. Now there was a discussion between Yabu and the old man and Omi. Yabu spoke to Mura. Mura pointed at the galley.
Hanjin-san, please, there.
Why?
Go, now, go.
Blackthorn felt his panic rising.
Why? Isogi!
Omi commanded, waving him toward the galley.
No, I'm not going to...
There was an immediate order from Omi, and four samurai fell on Blackthorn and pinioned his arms. Mura produced the rope and began to bind his hands behind him.
You sons of bitches! Blackthorn shouted. I'm not going to go aboard that god-cursed slave ship! Madonna, leave him alone! Hey, you piss-eating monkeys! Let that bastard alone! Kinjiro, ne? Is he the pilot? The engine? Ka?
Blackthorn could scarcely believe his ears. The boisterous abuse in Portuguese had come from the deck of the galley. Then he saw the man start down the gangway. As tall as he and about his age, but black-haired and dark-eyed and carelessly dressed in seaman's clothes. Rapier by his side, pistols in his belt. A jeweled crucifix hung from his neck. He wore a jaunty cap and a smile split his face.
Are you the pilot? The pilot of the Dutchman?
Yes,
Blackthorn heard himself reply.
Good, good. I'm Vasco Rodriguez, pilot of this galley.
He turned to the old man and spoke a mixture of Japanese and Portuguese, and called him Monkey-sama and sometimes Toda-sama. But the way it sounded, it came out Todi-sama. Twice he pulled out his pistol and pointed it emphatically at Blackthorn, and stuck it back in his belt. His Japanese, heavily laced with sweet vulgarities in gutter Portuguese, that only seafarers would understand. Hiromatsu spoke briefly, and the samurai released Blackthorn, and Mura untied him.
"That's better. Listen, pilot, this man's like a king. I told him I'd be responsible for you, that I'd blow your head off as soon as drink with you."
Rodriguez bowed to Hiromatsu, then beamed at Blackthorn.
"Bow to the bastard, Sama!"
Dreamlike, Blackthorn did as he was told.
"You do that like a japper,"
Rodriguez said with a grin.
"You're really the pilot?"
"Yes."
"What's the latitude of the lizard?"
49 degrees, 56 minutes north. And watch out for the reefs that bear south by southwest."
"You're the pilot, by God!"
Rodriguez shook Blackthorn's hand warmly.
"Come aboard. There's food and brandy and wine and grog, and all pilots should love all pilots, who are the sperm of the earth. Amen. Right?"
"Yes," Blackthorn said weakly.
"When I heard we were carrying a pilot back with us, 'Good,' says I. 'It's years since I had the pleasure of talking to a real pilot. Come aboard. How did you sneak past Malacca? How did you avoid our Indian Ocean patrols, eh? Whose rudder did you steal?"
"Where are you taking me?"
"Osaka. The great Lord High Executioner himself wants to see you."
Blackthorn felt his panic returning.
"Who?" "Torunaga, Lord of the Eight Provinces, wherever the hell they are. The chief daimyo of Japan. A daimyo's like a king or feudal lord, but better. They're all despots."
"What's he want with me?"
"I don't know, but that's why we're here. And if Torunaga wants to see you, pilot, he'll see you. They say he's got a million of these slant-eyed fanatics who'll die for the honor of wiping his ass, if that's his pleasure. Torunaga wants you to bring back the pilot, Vasco," his interpreter said. "Bring back the pilot and the ship's cargo. Take old Toda Hiramatsu there to examine the ship and..." "Oh, yes, pilot. It's all confiscated, so I hear. Your ship and everything in it."
"Confiscated?"
"It may be a rumor. Jappers sometimes confiscate things with one hand, give 'em back with the other. Or pretend they've never given the order. It's hard to understand the boxy little bastards."
Blackthorn felt the cold eyes of the Japanese boring into him, and he tried to hide his fear. Rodriguez followed his glance.
"Yes, they're getting restless. Time enough to talk. Come aboard."
He turned, but Blackthorn stopped him.
"What about my friends? My crew?"
"Eh?"
Blackthorn told him briefly about the pit. Rodriguez questioned Omi in pidgin Japanese.
"He says they'll be all right. Listen, there's nothing you or me can do now. You'll have to wait. You can never tell with a Japo. They're six-faced and three-hearted."
Rodriguez bowed like a European courtier to Hiromatsu.
"This is the way we do it in Japan. Like we're at the court of fornicating Philip II. God, take that Spaniard to an early grave."
He led the way on deck. To Blackthorn's astonishment, there were no chains and no slaves.
"What's the matter? You sick?"
Rodriguez asked.
"No. I thought this was a slaver."
"They don't have 'em in Japan. Not even in their minds. Lunatic? But there you are. You've never seen such lunatics. And I've traveled the world 3 times. We've samurai rowers. They're soldiers. The old bugger's personal soldiers. And you've never seen slaves row better. Oh, men fight better."
Rodriguez laughed.
"They put their asses into the oars, and I push 'em just to watch the buggers bleed. They never quit. We came all the way from Osaka, 300-odd sea miles, in 40 hours.
Come below. We'll cast off shortly.
You sure you're all right?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Blackthorn was looking at Erasmus. She was moored 100 yards away.
Pilot, there's no chance of going aboard, is there? They haven't let me back aboard. I've no clothes, and they sealed her up the moment we arrived. Please?
Rodriguez scrutinized the ship.
When did you lose the foremast?
Just before we made landfall here.
There a spare still aboard?
Yes.
Where's her home port?
Rotterdam.
She was built there?
Yes.
I've been there. Bad shoals, but a piss-cutter of a harbour. She's got good lines, your ship. New. Haven't seen one of her class before. Madonna, she'd be fast. Very fast. Very rough to deal with.
Rodriguez looked at him.
Can you get your gear quickly?
He turned over the half-hourglass sand timer that was beside the hourglass, both attached to the binnacle.
Yes.
Blackthorn tried to keep his growing hope off his face.
There'd be a condition, pilot. No weapons, up your sleeve or anywhere. Your word as a pilot. I've told the monkeys I'd be responsible for you.
I agree.
Blackthorn watched the sand falling silently through the neck of the timer.
I'll blow your head off, pilot or no, if there's the merest whiff of trickery. Or cut your throat. If I agree.
I give you my word. Pilot to pilot, by God. And the pox on the Spanish.
Rodriguez smiled and banged him warmly on the back.
I'm beginning to like you, Inglés.
How did you know I'm English?
Blackthorn asked, knowing his Portuguese was perfect, and that nothing he had said could have differentiated him from a Dutchman.
I'm a soothsayer. Aren't all pilots?
Rodriguez laughed.
You talked to the priest? Father Sebastião told you?
I don't talk to priests if I can help it. Once a week's more than enough for any man.
Rodriguez spat deftly into the scuppers and went to the port gangway that overlooked the jetty.
Todi-sama! Ikimasho ka?
Ikimasho, Rodrigo-san. Ima!
Ima it is.
Rodriguez looked at Blackthorn thoughtfully.
Ima means now, at once. We're to leave at once, Inglés.
The sand had already made a small, neat mound in the bottom of the glass.
Will you ask him, please, if I can go aboard my ship?
No, Inglés. I want to ask him a poxy thing.
Blackthorn suddenly felt empty and very old. He watched Rodriguez go to the railing of the quarterdeck and bellow to a small, distinguished seaman who stood on the raised forepoop deck at the bow.
Hey, Captain-san! Ikimasho! Get the samurai aboard you! Ima!
Ima! Wakarimasu ka?
Hai, engine-san!
Immediately, Rodriguez rang the ship's bell loudly 6 times, and the Captain-san began shouting orders to the seamen and samurai ashore and aboard. Seamen hurried up on deck from below to prepare for departure, and in the disciplined, controlled confusion, Rodriguez quietly took Blackthorn's arm and shoved him toward the starboard gangway, away from the shore.
There's a dinghy below, Inglés. Don't move fast. Don't look around. And don't pay attention to anyone but me. If I tell you to come back, do it quickly.
Blackthorn walked across the deck, down the gangway, toward the small Japanese skiff. He heard angry voices behind him, and he felt the hairs on his neck rising, for there were many samurai all over the ship, some armed with bows and arrows, a few with muskets.
You don't have to worry about him, Captain-san. I'm responsible. Me, Rodrigo-san, Ichiban Anjin-san, by the Virgin.
Wakarimasu ka?
Was dominating the other voices, but they were getting angrier every moment. Blackthorn was almost in the dinghy now, and he saw that there were no rollocks.
I can't scull like they do, he told himself. I can't use the boat.
It's too far to swim. Or is it?
He hesitated, checking the distance. If he had had his full strength, he would not have waited a moment. But now? Feet clattered down the gangway behind him, and he fought the impulse to turn.
Sit in the stern,
he heard Rodriguez say urgently.
Hurry up!
He did as he was told, and Rodriguez jumped in nimbly, grabbed the oars, and still standing, shoved off with great skill. A samurai was at the head of the gangway, very perturbed, and two other samurai were beside him, bows ready. The captain samurai called out, unmistakably beckoning them to come back. A few yards from the vessel, Rodriguez turned.
Just go there!
He shouted up at him, pointing at Erasmus.
Get samurai aboard!
He set his back firmly to his ship and continued sculling, pushing against the oars in Japanese fashion, standing amidships.
Tell me if they put arrows in their bows, Inglis. Watch them carefully. What are they doing now?
The captain's very angry.
You won't get into trouble, will you?
If we don't sail at the turn, old Toady might have cause for complaint.
What are those bowmen doing?
Nothing. They're listening to him.
He seems undecided.
No.
Now one of them's drawing out an arrow.
Rodriguez prepared to stop.
Madonna. They're too god-cursed accurate to risk anything.
Is it in the bow yet?
Yes. But wait a moment. The captain's... Someone's come up to him. A seaman, I think. Looks like he's asking him something about the ship.
The captain's looking at us. He said something to the man with the arrow. Now the man's putting it away. The seaman's pointing at something on deck.
Rodriguez sneaked a quick look to make sure and breathed easier.
That's one of the mates. It'll take him all of the half hour to get his oarsmen settled.
Blackthorn waited. The distance increased.
The captain's looking at us again.
No, we're all right. He's gone away. But one of the samurai's watching us.
Let him.
Rodriguez relaxed, but he did not slacken the pace of his sculling or look back.
Don't like my back to samurai, not when they've weapons in their hands. Not that I've ever seen one of the bastards unarmed. They're all bastards.
Why?
They love to kill, Inglés. It's their custom, even to sleep with their swords. This is a great country, but samurai are dangerous as vipers, and a sight more mean.
Why?
I don't know why, Inglés, but they are,
Rodriguez replied, glad to talk to one of his own kind.
Of course, all Japos are different from us. They don't feel pain or cold like us. But samurai are even worse. They fear nothing, least of all death.
Why? Only God knows. But it's the truth.
If their superiors say kill, they kill. Die, and they'll fall on their swords or slit their own bellies open. They kill and die as easily as we piss. Women are samurai too, Inglés. They'll kill to protect their masters. That's what they call their husbands here. Or they'll kill themselves if they're ordered to. They do it by slitting their throats. Here, a samurai can order his wife to kill herself, and that's what she's got to do by law. Jesu Madonna, the women are something else, though. A different species, Inglés. Nothing on earth like them. But the men. Samurai are reptiles, and the safest thing to do is treat them like poisonous snakes. You all right now?
Yes, thank you. A bit weak, but all right.
How was your voyage?
Rough. About them, the samurai. How do they get to be one? Do they just pick up the two swords and get that haircut?
You've got to be born one. Of course, there are all ranks of samurai, from daimyos at the top of the muck heap to what we'd call a foot soldier at the bottom. It's hereditary, mostly, like with us. In the olden days, so I was told, it was the same as in Europe today.
peasants could be soldiers, and soldiers peasants, with hereditary knights and nobles up to kings. Some peasant soldiers rose to the highest rank. The Taiko was one.
Who's he?
The great despot, the ruler of all Japan, the great murderer of all times. I'll tell you about him one day. He died a year ago, and now he's burning in hell.
Rodriguez spat overboard.
Nowadays, you've got to be born samurai to be one. It's all hereditary, Inglés. Madonna, you've no idea how much store they put on heritage, on family, rank, and the like. You saw how Omi bows to that devil Yabu, and they both grovel to old Todisama. Samurai comes from a Japo word meaning to serve. But while they'll all bow and scrape to the man above, they're all samurai equally, with the samurai's special privileges.
What's happening aboard?
The captain's jabbering away at another samurai and pointing at us.
What's special about them?
Here, samurai rule everything, own everything.
They've their own code of honor and sets of rules.
Arrogant?
Ha! Madonna, you've no idea. The lowest of them can legally kill any non-samurai, any man, woman, or child, for any reason or for no reason. They can kill legally, just to test the edge of their piss-cutting swords. I've seen them do it. And they have the best swords in the world. Better than Damascus steel.
What's that fornicator doing now?
Just watching us. His bow's on his back now.
Blackthorn shuddered.
I hate those bastards more than Spaniards.
Again Rodriguez laughed as he sculled.
If the truth's known, they curdled my piss too. But if you want to get rich quick, you've got to work with them, because they own everything.
You sure you're all right?
Yes, thanks.
You were saying, samurai own everything?
Yes. Whole countries split up into castes, like in India. Samurai at the top, peasants next important.
Rodriguez spat overboard.
Only peasants can own land. Understand? But samurai own all the produce. They own all the rice, and that's the only important crop, and they give back part to the peasants. Only samurai are allowed to carry arms. For anyone except a samurai to attack a samurai is rebellion, punishable by instant death. And anyone who sees such an attack and doesn't report it at once is equally liable. And so are their wives and even their kids. The whole family's put to death if one doesn't report it. By the Madonna, they're Satan's whelps, samurai. I've seen kids chopped into mincemeat.
Rodriguez hawked and spat.
Even so, if you know a thing or two, this place is heaven on earth.
He glanced back at the galley to reassure himself. Then he grinned.
Well, Inglés, nothing like a boat ride around the harbour, eh?
Blackthorn laughed. The years dropped off him as he reveled in the familiar dip of the waves, the smell of the sea salt, gulls calling and playing overhead, the sense of freedom, the sense of arriving after so very long.
I thought you weren't going to help me get to Erasmus.
That's the trouble with all Inglés. No patience. Listen, here you don't ask Jap men anything, samurai or others. They're all the same. If you do, they'll hesitate. Then ask the man above for the decision. Here, you have to act.
Of course.
His hearty laugh ran across the waves.
Sometimes you get killed if you act wrong.
You scull very well. I was wondering how to use the oars when you came.
You don't think I'd let you go alone, do you?
What's your name?
Blackthorn. John Blackthorn.
Have you ever been north, Inglés? Into the far north?
I was with Case Veerman in Delisle 8 years ago.
It was his second voyage to find the Northeast Passage. Why?
I'd like